Hulk Show.
Recorded live.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the next exciting episode of the Random Vortex. We're coming to you live, actually, but no one's here to listen to us. I'm in the room with Foe. Hello, Foe.
How's it going, West?
It's going pretty good. And today we're here to talk about Batman and the psychosis of the Batman.
The true superhero of America.
Yeah, I would agree. We're going to start out with a couple of news items. The first item, I think it's the biggest news story of the week, if you would agree with me, is the online they've posted some initial images of the new Green Lantern movie. And it kind of falls into what we're talking about because it's a superhero.
Absolutely. Green Lantern, one of the biggest movie, I would argue, of 2012. I know Thor is bringing in some competition, but Green Lantern, I still believe, is the top movie. Well, I guess actually 2011, not 2012. That's Batman's time, but Green Lantern, the biggest film I'm looking forward to of next year.
Yeah, you're jumping ahead just a little bit. I think Green Lantern looks interesting because it's Ryan Reynolds, who is usually known for, like, snarky romantic comedies and comedies in general, like Waiting, and he did do a turn in the Amityville Horror, but that was kind of, you know, interesting.
Definitely Maybe, I would argue, one of the best films of the decade.
Yeah, actually, Definitely Maybe is a really good movie if you haven't seen it. It's a little romantic comedy film, but that's okay. Romantic comedy has a place in the world.
Definitely.
I like quite a few of them. But that's like the big news story. Entertainment Tonight showed a little teaser about a Tuesday night episode where they're going to show a lot more clips. So
one thing I noticed from the clips, it looked like they were using the Greg Berlanti script, or at least a script heavily based off of it. I noticed a few scenes that I recognized from reading the original Berlanti script when it hit the web two years ago at this point. But it looks like they're going based off of that that script, and which it was a good script. Not perfect, far from perfect. It's very Iron Man like, and it's humor, and it's a combination of humor and action. I hope they polish up a few areas. The best friend character I know was very, very weak. He was basically the same character Anthony Anderson played in Transformers, being the overly stereotypical nerd sort of guy who wasn't at all realistically nerdy.
Basically, he represents the fanboy quotient of the film watching it.
Yes. And I was, to be honest, less than enthused by the clips I saw. But, I'm still very, very optimistic about this film. How did you feel about it, Wes?
You know, I've always liked Green Lantern. I'm not as big on the mythology as Batman or Superman. I wasn't one for going out and buying Green Lantern comics. In fact, during the 80s when the comic boom was big, I collected some of it. Because they redid Green Lantern by killing off Hal Jordan and making Guy Gardner Green Lantern. So that was the era I was in, and I never was really up on his character. So,
I read the Hard Traveling Heroes collection written by this is quite embarrassing because they're two of the biggest. Denny O'Neill, I think, and someone else. It's really embarrassing. They're one of the titans of the DC universe.
You know, it's okay.
Writing off
listeners of mine, listeners of ours, will probably Wikipedia-ing it as we speak. So it'll be all right.
The Hard Traveling Hero. One of my favorite collections is the classic Green Arrow, Green Lantern tales. I recently read the rebirth story of Hal Jordan with the building up to the Sinestro Corps sort of. I've yet to read the true Sinestro Corps and then the Green Lantern War sort of graphic novels, which I know everyone's told me are just fantastic. I look forward to enjoying those. But the Green Lantern character is presented in the Greg Berlanti script was clearly trying to build off of the momentum of that snarky, you know, playboyish sort of character that you got from Iron Man. It seemed to me like it was specifically written to be the Iron Man of the DC universe. The
right
mix of, you know, charisma and lighthearted action, you know, mixed with, you know, a lot of good qualities. I was not all that impressed by the old clips online as it is for whatever, you know, I think they look much better in the context. I'm still not sold on a CGI Kilowog, and I was kind of hoping for, you know, more of a prosthetic version, which
the footage I saw wasn't that bad, and it makes me realize that, yes, it's probably going to be a pretty decent Green Lantern movie.
It should be fun.
And, you know, the casual fan like me will enjoy it heavily. You know, much like the casual Iron Man fan enjoyed Iron Man, even though Iron Man's not a lot like the comic book.
Yes. Well, the $200 million mark is the key for this movie. It has to make at least $200 million, or else it'll be a complete failure. It's going to be, if I remember correctly, it's a winter release.
Yeah,
they may have changed that in the last few months. I thought it was a November, December sort of release.
If the buzz gets good, they'll move it to pre-summer, like right around April, May, just to kind of get it out there, make it money, and get out before the big summer blockbusters hit. Green Lantern looks decent to me. I mean, it doesn't look like they're going to destroy it, like some of the stuff that they've done.
No.
Batman and Robin, which we'll be talking about later.
Everything DC's done since Catwoman, which DC was actually not a part of, everything they've done since then, be it Constantine, be it V for Vendetta, be it Batman, be it Superman. Again, I'm a defender of Superman Returns. I believe you are as well.
Oh, yeah, me too.
And also Watchmen.
I really liked
Watchmen until the dying day. But, I love everything DC has done since Catwoman. So I'm still optimistic. I hope it's a big franchise. I hope it spins off Flash movies and Wonder Woman movies and everything else.
Well, that's something that DC desperately needs. They've got a hit with the new Batman, the way Christopher Nolan did it, and we'll get into that in just a few minutes. And, you know, Superman Returns, I thought, was a great reboot of the series. If they can get the right director and let it go, it's going to be wonderful. Mm-hmm. But the Marvel characters are taking over the box office, and DC really needs to get on the bandwagon. So I think they're going to get a good start with Iron Man. I'll wait till it comes out, and we'll have a show on it, I'm sure, but it looks okay. I mean, we only saw like 20 seconds of it, so it's not like it's nothing major, but they're going to show more on Tuesday, so I'm sure next week we'll have more of a report on it. A second news story is the movie that's out now that whatever studio did it, and I can't remember who it is, it's banking on this as a big hit, but it's gotten some really bad buzz. It's Skyline.
I haven't read a full review of the movie yet. I've just heard seen terrible, terrible review headlines. I think it mainly Ain't It Cool News, I think, is the only one that's
The guys over at Ain't It Cool News, who generally have decent reviews, and they back up their reasons why they don't like a movie with facts as opposed to just saying, I don't like it.
Yeah.
They're like, here you go. They're like, not liking it. And they're just saying the acting is really bad, the script is really bad, and they said the first, like, 20 minutes of the movie are fantastic, and the last, like, 90 minutes of the movie are the worst thing that's ever been committed to film. So
yes, I mean, it kind of came in out of nowhere. I'd never heard of the movie before.
No, I saw the trailer the other day, and I was like, well, that looks interesting, but it also looks like a mixture between District 9, which was a fantastic freaking movie, and Cloverfield, which was somewhat good for what it was. So it's like Cloverfield and District 9 mixed together with a little ID4. So
I'm a huge Cloverfield fan and even a bigger District 9 fan. And I've come to the point where I doubt any movie that cinematically features Angel Batista from Dexter. I've heard bad things from Expendables. Unfortunately, I haven't seen it. Which, I mean, it was on my
list about the best one he's been on, but.
I had no interest in seeing it in theaters, even compounded by the bad reviews. I'm fairly, apathetic to this movie, which is a bad sign.
The reviewer that I saw said it's not even worth a $1 Redbox rental. So I think free on Netflix is probably the only way to see it.
It kind of looks like this year's Dragon Wars, even though, I mean, Dragon Wars had a little bit of success, I guess. But, I mean, that's what I think of more than anything else, because, I mean, it's just a movie that looks like a big-budget spectacular without any of the build-up, without any of the hype, without any of the interest that your average big blockbuster spectacular has. I don't know if it's true or not, but I think of more Dragon Wars than, say, District 9 when I look at the trailers or anything else.
I think that the studio
kind of sounds like it's more that quality, too.
The studio knows what a turkey they've got, so I think they're just dumping it out in the holiday season to try to eke out as much money as they can. But, watch out for Skyline. I don't know if it's good or not, because this is one of those movies where the hardcore geek fans, like Ain't It Cool News, who think they know what they're really talking about, or are going to blast it. But you might go
it's the only movie like itself out there right now. It's the only movie like itself out there right now, which definitely helps it. And we didn't really have a big sci-fi pick of the summer. So, it could pick up, some demographic. But I think most of the big hardcore sci-fi fans listen too much. Well, not even necessarily too much, but, they listen to, the sites like Ain't It Cool News, and there's no franchise to base it on. There's no goodwill that this movie's received as far as viral marketing or any sort of really true geek gems that it has up its sleeve. I don't think it's going to be tremendously successful. I don't think it's any. I've yet to see any reason to believe it's of any great quality. And it could be the greatest movie, I haven't seen it yet, and just the reviews missed the point or whatever. But from everything I can reasonably infer from everything I've seen, it is a movie that I'm going to forget about as soon as its theatrical run and commercials stop running.
Yeah, it'll be one of those you're walking through Walmart one day and, hey, look, there's Skyline.
Oh, Skyline.
I'm still not going to buy it.
Yeah.
The directors are the ones that gave us that wonderful gem, Alien versus Predator, which they claim that the studio ruined and they didn't get a chance to shoot their own stuff. So this is them shooting their own stuff, and apparently it wasn't the studio. The studio was trying to make Alien versus Predator better.
Amazing how that happened.
So, yeah. So I guess that gets rid of most of our news, other than, there's going to be a lot of podcasts floating around about Harry Potter here pretty soon. We'll probably end up doing yet another Harry Potter show. I understand that Mike and Audrey on Mike's show, which you should check out, are probably going to be talking about it. Hopefully I can get in there.
I'm always down there talking for some Harry Potter. J.K. Rowling's fantastic series. I'm always glad to bring
I'm sure So and I are going to be there opening night watching that film so we can critique it later.
I will be dressed like Remus Lupin and everything. I will be doing my darndest to geek out appropriately and see Green Lantern in its full cinematic quality.
From that comment, it makes me think that maybe Lupin is one of your favorite characters.
I love Lupin. I love the entire Martyrs. Like those are my favorite four of the entire series. Well,
let's not
Pettigrew fans,
Pettigrew is terrible, but I will have to say that Lupin is probably my favorite character in the book series. They handled him well in the movie, so that's all I got to say. But moving right along, our topic tonight is the psychosis, or the psychology of Batman.
Yes.
Which we started out, our topic was going to be Batman in film and how they handled him, starting with the TV series in the 60s and moving on up to The Dark Knight. And talking a little bit about what we think about is going to come on in the third one, Dark Knight Rising. But
so obviously,
we'll get
to point it out before any of the true Batman hardcore fanboys correct us, the Batman film fandom not start in the 60s, but rather the late 30s, early 40s with the Batman serials that were, of course, very racist and not very good, but did give us the addition of Alfred. I'm thinking of Frank Miller's Year One script, but Alfred was brought to us thanks to the wonderful early 30s, 40s Batman serials.
We were going to touch on those, and I didn't even
touch on them because most people.
Most people haven't even seen it. Just to give you a little background, the 1940s, 30s, and 40s Batman serial was like you go to the movie theater and it had like a little 20-minute thing with cliffhangers and Batman was a government agent. So they didn't want a masked vigilante running around at the time, so they made him a government agent who wore a costume. And basically,
Molly,
we're recording live at an outdoor area, so there's people walking around.
Stone Harbor Apartments. If you're looking at Panama City, Stonehover Apartments, where
do they are? They are there's a dog running loose, and I'm going to try to capture it and help this lady out.
We are good Samaritans after all. We don't just talk the talk. We walk the walk.
Yeah, I'm whistling at the dog now.
If only they might not discover our little hide of beer, we'll be quite all right.
No problem. So, Batman.
Yes.
Yeah, the 30s, it was a propaganda film. It was during World War II, so everything was anti-Japanese, and the villain was Japanese, and the thing is kind of hokey, and the cliffhangers are cool, but it was the first cinematic, really, superhero. I think they had some of the Charles Fleischer Superman cartoons out, but there weren't that many.
Have you ever seen those? Those are extravagant. I mean, they're done by the same people that do Pie Pie. As some of the, I know Deanie and Tim, who were forced to be the animated DC series, the Batmans, the Supermans, the Justice League, the Justice League Unlimited. They always talked about how they seeked to emulate the original Fleischer Superman cartoons. They were never able to quite get the animation because they were given so much money, or I guess I had so much ability to do, you know, the cut for cut Superman cartoons. They spent tremendous amount of time and arguably are the best animated Superman cartoons ever to be released. I mean, the impact.
As a matter of fact, they're actually more true to the character than the movies or the TV show or anything.
Yeah.
And they're really good. If you have a chance to get the Fleischer Supermans, but we're not here to talk about Superman.
No.
Which
is
okay,
because
this is random vortex.
Go on
about random stuff. But it comes up. I mean, that was like the only thing I think was in the cinemas. And so, you know, everything was anti-Japanese. So it is very racist. And I know that, like, certain video releases of the original Batmans were heavily edited. And then when it finally came out on DVD a couple of years ago, they put it back to its original pristine glory. But they're really cheesy and hard to watch. And they are kind of a precursor to the TV show because the TV show is closely in vein to those stories. But to talk about the psychology of Batman, he wasn't crazy at that point. Well, I'm not saying he's crazy. We're going to get to that later. But
yes.
The Batman character was a government agent, so his job was to dress up like the Batman, and he worked for the police, and he did all this stuff. So he was legit, I guess you could say. And Robin was just kind of there. Robin represented us and was asking the questions, what's going on, Batman? So it's like Doctor Who with the companions. You know, their job is to ask the doctor what's going on so he can explain to the audience. The next film commitment to Batman was the 1960s TV show.
Yes.
And
Adam West.
That was kind of based on the comic book at the time, because at that time the comics had changed from being the dark Batman of, you know, the classic 30s, 40s, and 50s to being more of a...
The original Bill Finger Bob Kane was a very dark creature. Then he became lighter in the 50s, late 40s. And then it was ironic because as the Batman TV show came out, the movement in the comics was actually towards a more serious, a darker Batman, as opposed to I guess it's still referred to as the Silver Age 50s Batman, where they I believe at the same time is when they introduced the new Green Lanterns and the Green Flashes.
You know, maybe what we should do for some listeners that don't follow comic books, like I used to follow them a lot. I don't follow them much anymore because, quite frankly, they're overpriced. There's so many books that I could read, I could never afford to buy them. It's just too expensive. But explain to us real quick, though, the difference between, like, Golden Age, Silver Age, and the different ages, so that when we're talking about the comics Batman versus the movie Batman, we know kind of what's going on.
The Golden Age was the original, was when the first comic boom originated, and that's when you got your Supermans, you got your Batmans, and when you really started to see the superhero industry take off in the comic book medium. The 50s age was more sci-fi, it was more... 1950s. I'm not the biggest comic book expert out there, and if I'm making a mistake, I sure hope someone corrects me so I could, you know, prove everything back. But I think I'm pretty.
They will correct you.
The 1950s or more of the Silver Age of comics. That's when Hal Jordan was introduced. That's when Barry Allen was introduced as the Flash. It's when you had the second breath of superheroes, where it was more of the sci-fi. It was more of the Superman, where the comics where Lois Lane would change characters, or you would change bodies, and you had, it was more of the outlandish superhero sort of stories in the comics. I would argue more of the Super Friends version of Batman, more of the Adam West style of Batman, more of the lighthearted, more adventurous, you know, sort of stories. I think what a lot of people think of as classic comics are more Silver Age than say, like, the original Golden Age. I sure hope I'm right, because if not, I'm going to feel rather foolish tomorrow.
Well, people that are alive today that are like my dad's age probably read the Silver Age comics more, because I remember, like, I found a stack of my dad's old comic books. He had a lot of Batman and Robin, and, you know, it was, you know, they had, like, one book was just Detective Comics, which is where Batman came from. Now, to give you a little history on my end, Detective Comics started out as, like, detectives solving crimes, and then one issue came along where they introduced the Batman, and he took off like you would not believe. Everyone just loved the Batman, and they didn't have a lot of the backstory we got now when it first came out, and he was just a masked vigilante who worked outside of the law, who caught criminals and turned them into the police, and he was just a rich guy that had enough money to do it.
And there was very little influence by the butler. There was very the commissioner was a fat man, much similar to the Tim Burton Jim Gordon. I guess less like the Michael Goh Alfred, since he didn't play a rather major role, especially in Batman Returns, less so, but still present in
Batman.
Serials.
He didn't have, like, crazy whacked out lunatics as villains. You know, he had regular guys with, like, old style felt hats that were, like, mobsters, and he was stopping them.
Batman became very popular.
So he became the dominant force in Detective Comics. Then I think that's when Superman came out. He came out after Batman, I believe. And they
Superman was actually the original. He came out before Batman, and then they basically went to Bob Finger, or Bob Kane. I mean, because the guy's name's not Bob Finger. Bob Kane said he was writing other comics, and they said, you know, we want a more or less replica of Superman for the Detective Comic Detective Comic issue. That's when he came with the Batman. He came with the ears. He came with, you know, Bill Finger was arguably the true creator of Batman. He was the writer, or Bob Kane was the artist. Arguably the true creator of Batman. He died, I believe, penniless. Not quite unlike the Fleischers, who I believe also was in the end didn't receive the financial gains that they were necessarily entitled to, given the creation of Superman. But if I remember correctly, Superman was created in 39, and Batman was in 40. Or no, actually, Batman, I think, was 39, maybe Superman 38. But it was in that time frame. But I do know Superman was the first creation. Was the first superhero.
Well, the Fleischer-Schuster family sued. They were the creators of Superman. They sued DC Comics. And now anything that has to do with Superman has to have their name on it. So if you watch Smallville, it says Superman created by Fleischer and Schuster.
It was Schuster and Fleischer was the Popeye creator who did the cartoon. It was Schuster and
that's right. Let's get our
this is literally killing me. I mean, if you asked me a year ago, I would be able to stop this off the top of my head.
Tonight's episode is brought to us by Yangling.
Yangling.
A really good lager, and we probably should have not had as much as we had before now.
I don't know about you. I mean, it's making me better, I believe. It is promoting the episode in true fashion.
Yeah, well.
But,
anyway, back to Batman. So you had the different ages of comics, and then, you know, when the Batman TV show came out with Adam West, let's talk about that for a minute. It was very, very tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
You know, to the point where, like, they're punching people, and Pow and Zam and Woom come up on the screen, and, you know, Batman and Robin.
Hugely successful, and especially overseas. I think Adam West was famous for saying that he's huge in Argentina, or something like that. But an international phenomenon Batman became. The car was paraded all around the country. Very, very popular.
You know, to tell you the truth, If I came in possession of one of those Batmobiles, I would certainly drive it around. It's really cool looking.
Definitely. Tallahassee has a car museum that has the Batmobiles in it.
It was on for 3 years, and the first two seasons, they had, you'd have one episode, and the next day they'd have part two, and there was always a cliffhanger where the duo, because that's where the famous same, you know, come tomorrow.
Same bat time, same bat place.
Same bat channel. And then I think season three, they went to one episode with no cliffhanger, and they introduced Batgirl, which I think she came along in the TV show, and they added her to the comics later.
I believe you're correct, yes.
Could be wrong, and I'm sure someone's clicking Wikipedia as we speak, but her character, Barbara Gordon, and I think in the comics, or in the TV show, was she Commissioner Gordon's daughter? I can't remember. I think she might have been.
Yes, yes.
And so they wanted to get girls watching the show more, so they added Barbara Gordon, and she was pretty popular, but it only stayed on that one abbreviated season. But they put out a ton of episodes because they had two-parters, so it was in syndication for years. And for a lot of people, that was the only way to see Batman. People weren't reading the comics, they were watching the TV show. Like, lay people would be like, oh, that's what Batman is. That's kind of, you know, it was silly for the 60s, and they had really dumb guest villains like, you know, Egghead and the Pharaoh.
Did I ever tell you that? Egghead, by the way, almost became a national prominence because he was the first rumored villain of Batman Begins, actually, was Egghead.
Really?
But the very first Batman Adam West TV show I ever saw, or at least remember seeing, was the episode where the Penguin ran for the mayor position, which, of course, was the storyline that they adapted for Batman Returns.
Which we'll get to in a moment.
The Penguin ran for mayor in that movie. And that was the very first Batman, the TV show that I ever saw when it came on the TV Land run that it had briefly.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, they had already filmed most of season one, and they took a break and filmed the Batman 1966 movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie came out over the summer and introduced all the villains and made it popular, and then they put the TV show on in the fall, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
If not, it's between season one and two.
The film may actually possibly have been filmed before the show came out. Though I may be completely wrong on that, but I thought that possibly was the case.
It did.
But
it
the first villain they ever premiered on the TV show was the Riddler, with Frank Gorshin. If I remember correctly, I know.
You know, to this day, even with Jim Carrey playing him, Gorshin is the definitive Riddler.
Jim Carrey
and half Gorshin.
Jim Carrey was very heavily influenced by Gorshin. And Depp referenced him. They recently released the Riddler was not supposed to be the villain or whatever, and I don't know if that's still going to be true or not. But I know Depp, when asked about how he would portray the Riddler, I believe that he went to Frank Gorshin as an inspiration he would use. But I know Jim Carrey was heavily influenced by him, and he was really he was the guy that kind of kicked off the whole Batman villain, you know, 1960s show craze. That became a huge thing in Hollywood, was that you would go out and you would play a villain in Batman's TV show. Sure did.
Vincent Price played the Egghead, and you had the Bookworm, I think, was played by Roddy McDowell. And, of course,
Cesar Romero's Joker with the infamous white makeup pasted over the mustache. One of my favorite online handles I ever had was Romero's Stash, which is still to this day one of my favorites. But
Romero was so iconic as the Joker that the comic book Joker was based on Romero's portrayal for years.
Every Joker performance has been nothing short of iconic. I mean, you had George Romero, you had Jack Nicholson, you had
Wait. George Romero is the zombie guy. You're talking about Caesar.
Cesar Romero, yes.
And we don't mean Cesar like Planet of the Apes Cesar. We're talking about Cesar Romero.
Yes.
And he, you know, when Nicholson played the Joker in Burton's Batman, he didn't play it like Cesar Romero. It's the first time it had ever been different. Any kind of cartoons, whenever they'd show. As a matter of fact, I think Super Friends used Romero as the voice of the Joker whenever he was on there. There was one season on Super Friends where they used Adam West and Burt Ward as the voices, and it was just a TV show. There's a special that came on when I was a kid, which was the live-action Super Friends TV show. And it's very bad, and I think you might could find it on YouTube.
Have you seen the live action Justice League CBS pilot?
That might be the one I'm talking about.
I can't remember if Batman was in it. I know the Flash definitely was. I think the Weatherman
was
a villain. It is worth watching. YouTube the hell out of that. Because, I mean, if it is worth watching just to see a 1980s CBS Justice League pilot, how it would look. It is worth the time.
Challenge of the Super Friends or something like that. I could be wrong. I'll have to YouTube it later, and I should look. I didn't think we would talk about it, but the Adam West and Burt Ward played Batman and Robin in it,
yeah.
And there was a bunch of other actors that were playing different characters, and I'm not sure. I think it's before Wonder Woman came on TV, but it was really god-awful bad, and they did two of them, and they were mildly successful. Batman's TV portrayal for years was just relegated to cartoons, and it was always the cheesy Batman. Well, the Batman and the Super Friends was all right, but Super Friends was just a kids' TV show, and it was great.
And that was the perception most people had of mainstream comics. Of course, 1970s, Dennis O'Neill and something Adams. The Stevie Blunt mentioned earlier was the hard-traveling heroes. Then Denny O'Neill and Dennis Adams, I believe. I don't know. But it's something along those lines. I'm embarrassed that I cannot remember these two, because I mean they are just pioneers in the medium. But I mean the 1970s Batman. That is when Batman arguably really hit its swing. That's when Ra's al Ghul was introduced. That's when Tali was introduced. That is when you know a lot of the really really good Batman comics came out was during the 1970s. And that immediately followed, the Adam West Batman mainstream image. You know, it went completely contrary to, everything people thought of regarding Batman. And it was really the 1970s comics that revived the industry and gave it new life and really, pushed it through to what we have now. Because it's definitely, if not the, 1960s, it's really the 1970s
I don't remember if the 60s Batman TV show said anything about Batman's history with his parents dying and all that and why he was Batman. But getting into the psychology of Batman, the 60s Batman was just a guy that was, to me, he was so rich, he had nothing to do with his life, so he became a crime fighter. And he worked with the police, and he was actually duly deputized as a cop, so he didn't get in trouble. And they called Batman for every little problem that happened. It was almost like Batman was the only police force. And they had a lot of episodes where Batman climbing up the wall,
possibly
a celebrity person popping out. Yeah, he did meet the Green Hornet in an episode. And I think he was just a rich millionaire playboy with a ward, which was kind of weird for the 60s. There's a lot of homoerotic overtones in the classic series that are unintentional.
You cannot talk psychosis of Batman without bringing up the 1980s Frank Miller run, which
I got to mention some things about Robin.
Okay.
We get the famous holy something Batman. Robin was just this teenager guy that everybody loved, and he's like, holy Pharaoh's Pyramids Batman. He would just throw something on there.
Metal Batman.
They made a joke about that because it was such an iconic phrase in Batman Forever.
The best part of Batman Forever. The best part.
Yeah, Robin climbs up on this thing and he looks at it and goes, holy rusted metal Batman. And Batman's like, what? And he goes, yeah, it's metal and it's rusted and it's got really big holes in it. And Batman's like, oh, okay. So it was kind of...
Val Kilmer.
When I heard that line, I was like, oh, my God, they didn't just do that. And then they did, and then they made it funny, so it was good. It's actually, you're right, the only good part of Batman Forever.
The best.
Which we'll get to that.
Yes.
Because that movie is not necessarily the psychosis of Batman. It's the psychosis of the producers who made that movie.
That movie, honestly, arguably, when it was first imagined, was the movie that most went into the psychosis of Batman. The very heavy aspect of it was, is Bruce Wayne Batman now, or is he Batman forever? And that was, you know, that was the big, you know, question. And I know they had the deleted scene where, the you know, he's looking at the large sculpture of the bat. And, you know, that was always the iconic scene that they cut out that I've seen plenty of pictures of. You know, Batman Forever was honestly the first movie where they really went out of their way to kind of build up the psychosis of Batman in the film sense. Batman Returns was obviously very, you know, it was more metaphorically targeted towards the psychosis of Batman with the Penguin, you know, with the bat, the cat, and the bird, I believe was the tagline for that movie. And, you know, you had Catwoman representing the duality of Batman. You had, you know, the Penguin representing the freakishness of Batman and whatnot. I mean, Batman, you know, the original, you know, 89 with Tim Burton kind of, you know, dipped into the...
Hang on a second.
Obviously, the entire conversation would be based off of this right now. But I don't want to, you know, any spoiler alerts to the rest of our show. So, you know, I'll just continue on.
No, I mean, we can spoiler it because, you know, everyone's seen them 100 times. But let's start talking about Burton's Batman, because it was the first time on film the Batman was depicted the way he was in the comic book as a darker person. Now, what I was reading in Wikipedia, what I remember from when I was growing up during all this, because you were probably just barely a zygote by the time that this came out.
89, baby.
All right. Well, see, you were born after Batman, so I was right.
Yes.
Zygotes abound. Anyway, what I remember about it is, you know, as a kid, I hear that Michael Keaton's playing Batman. And so as a kid, I was like, that's Mr. Mom. You know, he's not a superhero. What's up with that? And, you know, the fanboy, this is before internet, so there wasn't a lot of fanboy discussion. So all you got from it was, like, occasional TV news reports about them making Batman. And you would get, I was a fan of Starlog magazine, which was the big sci-fi magazine that was out at the time. So I knew about Batman because they had mentioned it there that Michael Keaton was, and you'd have, you know, people writing in letters. So the only dissension you had were letters of people saying, oh, this is crap casting, what's up? So when
I know they had Alec Baldwin was one of the studio favorites of the time. Robert Redford was Redford at one point.
Yeah, there was one of the big greats.
Out of left field at the time.
The reason why they picked Michael Keaton is because when they got Tim Burton to direct it, he had just directed him in Beetlejuice.
Yep.
And he knew that he would be good at it. And, you know, honestly, I thought he was great. But the
I would argue
people
he's the best
about
Batman. The best Batman on film to date.
Yeah, he's
Batman.
Pretty good,
Batman.
Actually.
Not Bruce Wayne, yeah. Batman.
So he gets the part, everybody's freaking out, and they put out the first trailer. If you go to YouTube and you look up the first Batman 1989 trailer, there's no music. They just cut together some scenes so they can have it out in the theater.
Yep.
And it wasn't until he did that famous line where he picks the guy up and goes, I'm Batman. People realize, okay, this is not the 1960s Adam West. Because, you know, Adam West was trying to get the part, too.
Yep.
And, so they get into it, and he plays Bruce Wayne as just the regular rich guy. He's not playing a dual role with Bruce Wayne like Christian Bale, which we'll get to in a little bit. But, you know, he was just this cool, calm guy who had, by the time Batman comes on, has already been Batman for a while, so you don't get much backstory. There's one scene where he goes and places roses at his parents' grave, and that's about it. So you don't really get a reason why Batman is Batman. Why is he running around? Why is he being a superhero? But he's already.
That's what a lot of Batman Begins to really have such a success it had.
Right. Well, then you got the police are trying to get him because he's a mass vigilante. They don't know that he's a good guy. But the cool thing about that movie is it introduces the Joker. And I don't really think they could have picked a better actor than Nicholson. Nicholson plays Nicholson like he usually does, but he plays it so well. And I watched it. Because we were having this as a topic, I went back and watched all the Batman movies this week. So, yes, I have no life. I sat at home and watched all the Batman movies up to the Dark Knight. You know, no girlfriends, no nothing. I'm just pretty much watching Batman at night. So, loser me, let's move on. So, I'm watching Batman 89.
I was one of the original guys I thought you could not top Nicholson's performance. I mean, I love, even to this day, after seeing the Dark Knight, after seeing the wonder that was Heath Ledger's performance, where he brought so much, and I believe he captured so well the identity of the Joker. I still hold Nicholson's performance as one of the the top performances of all time, especially within the general comic book movies. If we were to make a list of comic book movie villains, number one would be probably Heath Ledger. Number two would be Jack Nicholson. I mean, you can go back
Slow down. Come on. Let me speak here for a second. Calm down.
Yes, go right ahead.
I will let you speak. I'm going to say that it's hard to compare Nicholson and Heath Ledger's performance, A, because the time period the movies are made are completely different, and B, they took the Joker in two different directions. So I would honestly say that Nicholson's performance of the Joker versus Heath Ledger's performance, there's no comparison because you can't compare the two. The subject matter is completely different. You can't.
Got you. I know you can say you can't, but can you really help comparing the two? I mean, can you honestly, as a human being, go, like not compare the two? I mean, they applied, be it two totally different interpretations, but can you really go about and watch those two movies and say, and not say, I prefer that one?
Let me rephrase. You can't compare them because they're different. But, or let me rephrase that again. Sorry, it's the Yingling talking.
Go right for it.
You can't say one is better than the other because the performances are so completely different.
So
they distance themselves. They're both equally good. Nicholson's portrayal is a little bit more classic comic book. Heath Ledger's portrayal is just so personalized to the movie he's in that it is absolutely perfection when it comes to a villain. But
would you agree
that
the two are the best examples of comic book villains that we have to date on film? I really love Defoe's Green, Norman Osborn. I really do. I love Roz as portrayed in Batman Begins. There were other comic book villains that I hold to an extremely high level.
But I
believe that the two best comic book villains of all time are the two Jokers.
Possibly three Jokers,
if you want to throw in Cesar Romero.
Yeah, Cesar Romero is too comic booky. See, like, Nicholson's portrayal of the Joker is a more in line with the actual comic book portrayal of the Joker. I think Heath Ledger is so good because he took the Joker to a different level. And there's no comic book portrayal of the Joker that's anything like Heath Ledger. Because Heath Ledger's performance is more of a, I'm a guy that likes chaos. And I am going to throw my chaos out there completely, and you're going to watch what I do. And,
yeah.
You know, have
you read The Man Who Laughs?
No.
That comic, it is a remake of the classic Red Hood origin tale. And that Joker, I really think Heath Ledger captures that Joker, that specific Joker, which I think is so good.
That's possible,
I think he
but
really
I think
captures...
in the comic books, in the comics, they're going to start writing the Joker more like Heath Ledger's Joker now, because he's, quote, defined it for a new generation, which is true.
I know the writer and author of...
Nicholson's portrayal is a guy that got, he's scarred, he got burned, he got whatever, and he's crazy because he was sort of crazy to begin with because he was a mob enforcer who didn't care about killing people, but he got crazier, and that's what he's playing. It's just this bat stuff crazy guy who, basically wants to get revenge on there, and he blames Batman for dropping him into the vat, and he wants to get Batman because of that.
Did the debate between Mark Hamill and Heath Ledger, let's remove Jack Nicholson from the equation.
Okay.
Where do
now,
you
for those of you who
one?
Don't know, hold on a second. For those of you who don't know, Mark Hamill has voiced the Joker in the cartoons. After the first Batman came out, they did Batman the Animated Adventures.
More than any other actor. They
were based on the movie more than the comic book, and it's a fantastic series if you ever get to see Batman the Animated Adventures. Now, Mark Hamill portrays the Joker as a cross between comic book and Jack Nicholson, and he is fantastic as a voice actor. I think Mark Hamill's portrayal could be considered the definitive Joker, actually, because he captures the spirit of the character. Heath Ledger took him to another level. That's what's interesting about Heath. He didn't play the character.
It's really that scene where he breaks out the RPG. Breaking out a rocket launcher is just such an outrageous move that the cartoon Joker It did very often, but it is that scene where he just breaks out the RPG. That entire scene is great, not only because it brings about the worst stated line, I believe,
okay.
Which is
I
do not remember what the armed guard in the front of the car says, but it is the worst. It is the worst delivered line in the entire movie. I believe it's like something like that's not good. I think it's when they bring down the helicopter. But Heath Ledger's performance in that entire sequence of events is just so like that. That's when I go back and I rewatch The Dark Knight today, where you know early on I start underappreciating the Joker even through the magic scene part. But it's that scene where I always remember, man. Heath Ledger provided one of the best performances of all time, and it's during that scene where I always find myself, you know, reminding myself of that point that Heath Ledger, it just knocks out the show. And
put the brakes on for a second there, Runaway Train Man. Hold on a second. This is why we want to call ourselves the Hannity and Combs of the sci-fi discussion realm. I'm going to have to say, we will get to Heath Ledger in just a moment, because the topic is the psychosis of Batman,
yes,
which plays in with the villains. Now, we'll talk about the Joker, because that's very relevant to the conversation. But in the original Batman movie, just to rein us in, you know, as our Podshock friends say, stay on topic.
I'm very hard at that.
Do you think Batman in the original 89 movie was a psychotic person?
No, I think he became more psychotic in the 19 in Batman Returns, 1991, I believe.
Okay.
Batman. I think he was more. I wouldn't necessarily call him, you know, psychotic. I don't think I ever see in the 89 or Batman Returns, Batman. I never see the Frank Miller Batman, which I consider the true psychopath of the Batman mythos. I'm pretty sure Burton. If I remember correctly, it's been years before I was as up to date on the Batman history as I am now. I used to be hardcore into this stuff, but if I remember correctly, 89
used to
was
be.
slightly influenced by 89 by Frank Miller's Batman.
I think the Dark Knight came out by that point.
But I hate saying these things. So I'm not sure if they're true or not. But I know they're about the same time frame.
The 89 Batman.
Yeah.
They were going for more just a straight superhero movie. Now, Bruce Wayne character, you know, it's hard to get into his psyche at that point because, you know, they throw in the love interest, which he obviously could care about Vicki Vale, which I don't know why.
Yeah.
She was not that interesting, and Bruce Wayne probably had a lot better things to do.
The original Batman love interest. Do you know which movie she was in? Julie Madison, I believe her name. Do you know which movie was the original comic Batman love interest of again? I believe it's Julie Madison. Do you know which movie she first premiered in?
Was it the 1940s Batman?
No. It was actually Batman and Robin. Where it was a model who had very little lines. Julie Madison. It was the original Batman Bruce Wayne fiance. The original fiance of Bruce Wayne. I know. She is Julie. Again, I'm pretty sure it's Julie Madison. I hope it's Julie Madison. So I'll be very ashamed if it is not. But she first premiered in Batman and Robin, the infamous Batman movie, the most infamous Batman movie of all time.
Yeah, well, it's infamous because it's retarded, and that's where we talk about the psychosis of the producers and director of that,
not Batman.
I still argue the better of the two Schumacher films, but that's for another. That's probably for another show.
That is definitely another show because you're going to get some dissensions there.
I love it. I can defend that position all day long.
Anyway, 89 Batman, I don't think he was that crazy in it. I think he was just a guy that wanted to do some good in the town, and he became Batman because of that, because they weren't really getting into the psyche of Batman at that point.
No.
Because it was all about the Joker. That movie, that's the thing that's famous about that is, you know, you have Michael Keaton, who's great as Batman. He was pretty passable as Bruce Wayne, but, you know, he was just so relaxed playing the character, you didn't catch a lot of his stuff. But you don't get the duality because it's like Bruce Wayne and Batman are the same, and he's like talking the same. And see, what gets me in those early movies is Batman talks the same as Bruce Wayne.
He did bring in the Batman voice. He did that very well. I mean, probably better than Christian Bale at bringing in that gravelly Batman voice.
Christian Bale tried so hard. In the first Batman movie with Christian Bale, Batman Begins, he doesn't
quite, to quote Christian Bale in The Prestige, he does try so very hard. It's a little over the top, a little overbearing.
Batman's voice isn't that bad, and he's just kind of doing this. But in The Dark Knight, he's doing this all the time.
The Rachel Dawes scene is where he's it sounds uneven, some would argue that it is intentionally uneven due to the fact that he's trying to but not really trying to convince Rachel Dawes.
What I noticed about that, and it may be part of the Christopher Nolan trying to make the Batman psychosis come out, but when he's talking to Lucius Fox, who knows who he is, he's still doing the gravelly voice. And it's really bad. Whereas he could have been standing there with his cowl off going, okay, Lucius, this is what we need to do, instead of, okay, I'm giving you the keys to the kingdom, Lucius, help us. You know, he's still doing the bad.
Harvey! It gets over the top. And I hope they fix that with The Dark Knight, The Dark Knight Rises. I hope they fix that. I honestly doubt they will.
Well, I mean, if you look at other than Lucius Fox, anybody that would know who he was is dead at this point, you know.
except for Mr. Reese, who I remember when Mr. Reese was for the longest time regarded and Batman fandom as he's gonna turn out to be the Riddler, because Mr. Reese sounds like Mr. Ree, like, you know, Edward.
Refresh my memory. Which one is Mr. Ree?
He is the Wayne Corp employee who goes back and checks the books to see if he wants to do business. And he goes back and he realizes that Bruce. And I'm really glad they did that. Because that was one of the big comments that fans would bring up and regarding Batman Begins after the fact more than during, is that how are people not going to notice that Wayne technology was brought out into the streets in the form of this giant tank running over police cars on the TV news? How are people not going to connect the dots? I'm glad they had a character actually connect the dots and just kind of wash them away as they did, you know, to a certain extent. Yeah, that was a good way of brushing that into the rug, which just further proves the point that the ending with Harvey was not what they should have done, which is another subject entirely. But they did actually raise that point, which is a valid fan concern they had during those years in between the Batman Begins, the 3 years between Batman Begins and The Dark Knight.
I'll have to say that this topic is harder than it is to get on and talk about psychosis of Batman.
Because there's so much you can talk about regarding Batman. I mean, but if we're going to the hardcore psychosis of Batman, it arguably begins with Frank Miller. Would you agree?
I know you've been dying to talk about Frank Miller, so do your diatribe and let's get it out of the way.
I want to rebut Frank Miller, because Frank Miller seems like I've read Batman Year One, I've read All-Star Batman, I've read The Dark Knight Returns, and I've read the first few I'm struggling on through The Dark Knight Strikes Again. And I don't think Frank Miller understands Batman half as well as Frank Miller thinks he understands Batman. Frank Miller just seems to think that Batman is just, he really pushes hardcore the sociopath route, which I don't think is a extremely, I don't even think it's all that valid. I mean, the idea that you have to be a sociopath to do what Batman does, I reject that theory. I mean, maybe it's me being, an idealistic, 21-year-old or whatever it is. I don't think you have to be a sociopath to look out and say, there's good and there's evil, and I'm going to go out there and do good. Which is essentially what Batman, which is all Batman is in reality. I would argue Batman's libertarian. Obviously I'm politically biased in that arena.
Batman's libertarian, folks.
It, It just seems to me you do not have to be a psychopath to do what he does, and he clearly is. Less so in year one more than any other Batman comic that Frank Miller wrote, only because Batman became more Batman as time went on.
Well, Batman Frank Miller has written several Batman comics, but I think I think Frank Miller only caught Batman's essence twice.
Yeah.
The Dark Knight Returns, which is the pinnacle of Batman comics. You will have to agree with me. I think I'm there for it.
The pinnacle of Batman comics, I argue, is The Long Halloween by Jeff Loeb. That to me, if you want to talk about the fiend of Batman, you want to talk about cutting-edge Batman, for me, that is Jeff Loeb's Batman.
I understand that. What I'm saying is Frank Miller is the one that redefined Batman in a time when he
definitely
needed to be redefined.
Definitely.
That's what I'm talking
almost
about.
Almost unfortunately.
But he nailed it in Batman Year One.
Yeah.
That is probably one of the best Batman stories ever written, and you can't argue with that. Come on.
The only argument I have is that it is not a Batman story as much as it is a Jim Gordon story. That is the argument I have in that entire equation. I think the main character of Year One is Jim Gordon. I believe that is why Batman serves so well, is that he kind of does his little... I mean, Frank Miller loves to play the little, you know, more psychotic than he appears role, and you kind of get that regarding the Sarah Essen affair with Jim Gordon. He puts his focus on Jim Gordon.
All right, I'm just saying that before that time, there wasn't really a lot. There was some, but not a lot of exploring the secondary characters in Batman.
The 70s introduced characters like Harvey Bullock. They introduced characters like Renee Montoya. They introduced some of the characters that especially became popular with the animated series. Especially Harvey Bullock. There was a whole series where he was a corrupt cop turned good, and then he became the largest critic and the GCPD of Batman. And his character was very similar to the character of Detective Flash and Batman Begins, and arguably more so than the other Flash in the Year One comic, and later the Long Halloween and Dark Bias. He wasn't necessarily in the Long Halloween, but he was in Dark Victory. Those sort of characters really came up in the 1970s and then later played on and in larger roles in the animated series. But if we're going to talk, Frank Miller was the one that made Batman, who he is today. And again, I think his perception of Batman was too hardcore, was too extreme. I think Frank Miller is a comic genius. I really do. I don't want to bash Frank Miller, just for the sake of bashing Frank Miller, and it seems, especially after The Spirit came out, it seems to be a very easy thing to do, and to a certain extent, All-Star Batman and Robin. But I respect Frank Miller. I respect his impact on comics. I do not respect his Batman. I do not respect the notion. I do not respect the crazy sociopath Bruce Wayne, which I feel you get in The Dark Knight Returns. You get in The Dark Knight Strikes Again. You get an All-Star Batman. I reject that sort of sociopath Bruce Wayne. Forcing Dick Grayson to eat rats in the Batcave like he does in All-Star Batman and Robin. I reject that sort of Batman because I don't think you have to be on the edge of tyrant and liberator as that balance is so fragile. I much prefer. Much prefer actually the Batman Beyond version of a retired Bruce Wayne compared to a Frank Miller Dark Knight Returns style Bruce Wayne. I think the Batman Beyond is the ideal retired Bruce Wayne vision, and I love that scene, which I believe is at the end of the very opening episode of Batman Beyond where you have the old Bruce Wayne going in and trying to stop a crime, and he has to grab a gun and point him at the guy that's threatening him away, and he sees how weak that is, and he sees how this and that and this, and whereas Frank Miller's Batman would have just shot him dead and not had a second thought, and the Deanie Tim old Bruce Wayne, you get that, oh my god, I've become one of them, oh my God, you know, I'm not who I was. And I will never ever defend the Dark Knight Returns Batman on the premise of you know, it's so iconic. If Bruce Wayne becomes the Dark Knight Returns Batman, I do not respect Bruce Wayne the way I do today. I mean, to be quite honest, I reject the entire view of him. I don't think it's a very good adaptation.
You know, it seems to me like we almost bit off more than we can chew with this topic. we're coming up on a long show here, so what I'm going to do is we're going to pause it for now.
Okay.
And we're going to come back next week and talk about this some more and get into the movies a little bit more. This is kind of our introductory.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank everyone for listening and sitting through this. And we'll come back
and provide comments so we can address them in the all these shows that we could possibly have about Batman. We're going to fit them in, and you know, next little bit, you know, over the time, I think, especially as Batman becomes more and more into the mainstream, as we get ripping, you know, prepare for 2012 release.
You could almost
the Dark Knight Strikes,
just Batman.
You really could. And of course, you know, BatmanOnFilm.com, SuperheroHype.com, you know, all those sites, you know, showing the, you know, the up to the date, rumors and speculation and news about stuff, the upcoming phenomenon.
So we want to thank everyone for being here right now, and we will come back very soon, possibly in the next couple of days, to get the second half of this. Everyone go see Harry Potter. And for me, we'd like to say thank you for listening, and have a good evening.
Good night, everyone.